important to me that that Caleb and all the other characters are identifiable. I don't think that something's worth delving into this much or immersing yourself into unless you can have that tangible human connection with the characters. And I think that all great art and media will have that. You know, I think it's a hallmark of all of our favorite films, all of our favorite records, all of our favorite TV shows, everything. I think that people watching, you know, they want to be able to identify with the characters. They want to see a piece of themselves in the characters. And that's why, you know, you can go all the way back to the notion of, like, Greek tragedy and, you know, those classic plays, you know, the Odyssey, the Iliad, things like that, where the whole point, when you break down what tragedy was a catharsis. I mean, the audience wanted to see somebody else's trials and tribulations, not to revel in them, but as a shared catharsis, as a shared, you know, expulsion of emotion and pain.
Okay, while I was reading it, a lot of things really popped into my head, and I know great authors always, you know, kind of try and emulate things that they've seen and things that they've been affected by, but kind of right off the bat, I kind of felt, you know, that Stephen King, The Stand kind of thing, or like, you know, Battlestar Galactica, like Lost, in the fact that there are so many characters in the story that it's kind of impossible to have that main character, but at the same time, everyone kind of like pushes to someone, like, oh, maybe they're the main character, maybe they're the main character. In this story, you kind of have, you know, the FBI officer Jeffries, who's kind of like central to all the action, but then you have Caleb, who's involved in all the stories, and I mean, if you kind of think about it, all of the characters are involved in all of the stories, so what kind of made you kind of put together this multi-layered, you know, story?
I think that the town is the main character. I think that that's what ties everybody together, because after you finish the first five stories, you'll see that really anything is possible in this place, and it dictates the lives of all these people and affects the lives of all these people in so many different ways. And the most important thing to remember is that the town is a living and breathing entity. I mean, the town is just as active as Caleb is. The audience, the reader, you know, the viewer, the you know, anybody who chooses to take this ride, they experience it through Caleb's eyes, really. You know, each diary is written by a different character, and it was important for me to take a different perspective on the town in each one, because Shelley and Decker's take on Delore is obviously markedly different from Sam and Ariel. You know, they come from different places, they have different families, they have different problems, they have different addictions, they have different struggles. And I think that the interesting thing is to have this myriad perspectives on this one place as told by all these different people. You know, so it starts off with Caleb's perspective, and that's definitely the most important in some ways because he is in all of the stories. And then it kind of goes backwards to where Rob from Chrissy will pop up, Sam from Ariel will pop up, Shelley you're going to meet again, and, you know, all of the characters will resurface in some way, shape, or form. And that's just to show that they're all important. You know, it's not like they got a one-off diary and that was it. These characters were all, you know, very, very, very special to me. And, you know, I wanted them to live on more than just the 40 pages that they've written. Because they, you know, they write the diaries themselves, really. You know, that first-person perspective is very important for me because it allows me to give a different, you know, to look at Delore through a different lens. And that's one of the great things about it, really, is that, you know, that's what keeps it fun. That's what keeps it interesting. Because it's not easy for an audience in this day and age to keep their focus on one story for an extended period of time. And I always knew that, you know, coming from working in the online world and, you know, writing for as long as I have, I always always knew that, you know, keeping people's attention isn't necessarily easy. You know, there's so many things to choose from in terms of entertainment. So anytime somebody reads my book, you know, I'm beyond honored. You know, anybody that's willing to take the time to sit down and read it, you know, I'm very, very thankful for. And, you know, it makes me very, very happy because, you know, to have somebody else decide to devote their time, their, you know, 3 hours, 4 hours, however long it takes to read the book, you know, that's the ultimate accomplishment. You know, that's what it's about. You know, people are actually sharing that experience with me. And they get a bunch of different stories this way. They get, and I always felt like the stories were really different. I didn't think that you could really compare Decker to Lila to Chrissy to Cassie to Ariel. Especially the first five are really different.
Okay, I was wondering, as I'm reading through the story, a lot of the females in your stories have problems with, you know, drugs. What was the influence behind that? Was that just something that happened, or is that something that, you know, you've seen in your life, or, you know, how did that come about?
What I wanted to explore really was this notion that a lot of the characters are looking for salvation, or they are looking for some sort of comfort, and they don't always find it in the most healthy of places. So the chemical substitution for, you know, true happiness comes into play.
Basically, if you look at the town, everybody has some sort of addiction. And I don't even necessarily look at them like addictions. I think that you could take Shelley as the perfect example, as someone who just really wants to fit in, and she wants to fill a void, and she doesn't know any other way. And I think that that's what happens in a lot of these instances, especially with a character like Shelley or some of the other tertiary characters, the female characters that are heavy drug users. However, with somebody like Kayla, I think it's a little different. I think that Kayla is constantly just looking for that instant gratification in the moment, and she'll do anything to get it. And it doesn't matter if she puts her daughter at peril. It doesn't matter if she puts her husband at peril. She wants to satisfy her desires, whether they're emotional, chemical, or sexual. She's going to fulfill them as soon as possible, whenever she can, without any regard for anybody but herself. So I think that the addictions and, you know, the drug use kind of more manifest themselves as part of, you know, a deeper issue. You know, either it's control or it's, you know, just this need to constantly feel something. And I think that it's important to note that, you know, it goes across the board, too. It's not just the female characters. I think that, you know, a guy like Rob and Chrissy, he craves attention the same way that, you know, somebody like Shelley might crave to get high. You know, I think that they're both, you know, they both release the same chemicals inside your brain, and they're both not healthy. And, you know, my commentary on it is that, yeah, you know, drug use is really rampant in this country. And, you know, I think that it's sad that people can't find happiness other ways. And, you know, but it's true. I mean, I think that Delore really is a reflection of a lot of things that go on. I think that it's the attraction to me to write the story is I wanted to examine this space between the heinous, terrible, and, you know, evil and dark things that people do, and, you know, the supernatural, larger than life, creepy things that we fear when the lights are off. So the drug use definitely is a reflection of what goes on. And, you know, I don't condemn anybody. I don't, you know, I think that everybody should be allowed to, you know, kind of do what thou wilt, as they say. I think that, you know, if you're not hurting anybody else, really, you know, by all means, enjoy your life, you know, fulfill your desires, however, but I think that when it gets to a point to where, you know, you're defined by that need to satiate the desire, you're defined by that need to fulfill it, then it can hurt other people. So I think that it's an interesting dichotomy, and it's a gray area, too. I mean, you know, that's, but to me, it's an interesting thing to explore. It's a subject that, yeah, again, a lot of people can identify with, so that's why it's included in there, is because a lot of people can identify with it. We've all seen it. We've all dealt with it in some way. And, you know, in a larger cosmic sense, it extends deeper psychologically, and that's what's important to me.
Okay, just to remain focused on the female characters in your story, it's like you said about most of the characters in the story, they're looking for something to kind of fill the void in their life, but I don't know, I just feel through the first five books there hasn't been a really strong independent female character, like even Chrissy, who's kind of, you know, in a way, you know, omnipotent, she kind of falls flat because of she's not able to like get what she wants in the end, you know. So is that something that is going to change as the series goes on, like a woman that's like really in control of like everything and doesn't have like that crutch to fall on, or is there going to be like more of a female lead character in a story?
You know, this is the thing, is I think that Chrissy's a different, you know, because obviously we know the secret about Chrissy.
Uh-huh.
And she is she's pretty much evil incarnate. I mean, the thing that she does is you know, it's pretty bad.
Yeah.
You know, she's not somebody to look up to at all. And for me, it's kind of like, you know, I think that your strong female character is really Shelley. I mean, look at what Shelley goes through in Decker. I mean, I love Shelley. Shelley's one of my favorite characters in the book. Shelley was, I spent a lot of time writing that character, and I spent a lot of time constructing that character, and I spent a lot of time getting to know that character, and I think that Shelley's story is really sad because she's a sweet, sweet person, and she's got something very good inside of her, and she's very creative, and she's an amazing artist, but she's not really given the chance to follow her dreams and really bring them to fruition. I mean, she's oppressed by, you know, a religious family, and she leaves there, but Delore doesn't give her any options beyond what's directly in front of her. So she can't really transform her life, you know? She can't really go to the next level because she's held down by this town in a lot of ways. And it's not like she's in some kind of artistic epicenter, you know? It's not like she's in a place that people really understand what she's trying to do or who she's trying to be. But she makes the best of it. And then, you know, she ends up pregnant, and, you know, it gets even harder from there. I think that Shelley's strength is great. I think that Cassie is another very strong female character. I love Cassie, too. What Cassie goes through in terms of bullying and in terms of people not understanding her is harrowing. And her poem at the end of the story that, you know, closes out the five books is very important, because Cassie really bares her soul, and she shows people that, you know what, look, I'm not going to be judged by you because I'm different. I'm going to walk on my own path. I don't need anybody. You know, I want to be around the people who want to be around me, but I don't need people to, you know, to validate me. I don't need, you know, any kind of exterior validation, any kind of chemical validation, whatever. I think that Cassie's a very strong female character, too. If you kind of, you know, there are some more reprehensible characters in the book, such as Chrissy and Kayla and, you know, Ariel, too. But, you know, look at Shelley and look at Cassie as your real dynamic, you know, very, very intricate female characters. And I love the both of them. I mean, I think that Cassie and Shelley could both warrant their own books.
Okay, while you were writing the story, you said that you kind of let them do the writing. You let these characters do the writing. How hard was that to kind of find the voice? Because as you said before, each of the five stories have a different feel to them. Yeah, some of them encompass the same characters and some of the same, you know, motifs and whatnot, but they do all feel like completely different narrators. How difficult was that process?
It was fun. Like, it was a lot of fun because I felt like I could detach myself and really let them speak. So I think that, you know, getting into the mindset really kept it interesting for me. You know, like, it was so interesting to be able to get into the heads of all these different people that it was fun. I mean, definitely, you switch voices, you switch gears in terms of, actual literary structure, things like that. But, you know, it was so much fun that I never really look at it in terms of difficulty. You know, writing is the easiest thing in the world because it's the thing that makes me the happiest. So it's never difficult, really. If I have to belabor the point or if I have to try too hard, I stop. You know, I've never had that feeling because I only write when I know what I have something to say.
Okay, I got you. As far as kind of dedicating this series to another medium at some point, do you think that's something that's possible? Because it just has this great conversational tone that makes it very easy to follow in spite of, you know, all of the different layers and different, you know, the symbolism and the metaphors and things like that. It's just very easy to digest and to enjoy. So would you ever think about kind of making it a graphic novel or making it a TV series or anything like that?
I would love that. You know, I think that to see a Delore TV series or a Delore movie would be, you know, the most amazing thing in the world for me because I love movies so much. Movies and music are the two most important things to me outside of writing. And to see that happen would be incredible. I think that it's definitely possible. You know, it would be a matter of finding the right direction, the right production company, the right studio, the right people to really, you know, bring it to life in a very organic and very natural way. You know, I wrote it in a very visual, you know, almost cinematic style because I do think that it would translate pretty seamlessly. And, you know, it would be incredible if it happened. But at the same time, it's like I set out to be an author. You know, if I wanted to make movies, I'd go make them right now. And, I want to build this on my own, and I want to continue to build this independently and continue to develop the following more and more. And then, you know, if somebody down the line says, hey, let's make this a movie, you know, that's, then it becomes theirs in some senses. You know, the book will always be mine, but, you know, when somebody takes your material and then adapts it, you know, they put their own spin on everything. I think that those adaptations are, you've got to let whoever is adapting it put their spin on it then, because bringing it to a different medium, it's, it's never going to be the same vision as yours anymore.
Okay.
I mean, look at The Shining, you know, like, if you look at the first film, the Kubrick film versus the book, I mean, there's a lot of differences, and you know, but at the same time, it works on the big screen. And it's the same thing with a lot of Stephen King's adaptations. I mean, some of them are more, there's more of a one-to-one correlation to the text than others, but, you know, sometimes just things work different ways in movies than they do in books. Because you can't necessarily see a character's inner monologue in a film. I mean, you can sometimes. I mean, certainly, like, you know, we could go to the example of, like, Travis Bickle in Taxi Driver. You know what he's thinking. He doesn't have to say it, but, you know, De Niro is so good in that performance that you know what he's thinking. Or, you know, just De Niro in general. Like, I love that scene in Goodfellas where Sunshine of Your Love comes on, and he's looking at I think his name was Murray, and you know he's going to kill him.
Yep.
And that's just the brilliance of certain actors, you know, certain performances. You can, and I think Martin Scorsese pulls that out of people better than anybody, but, you know, that's the thing about it, is that, you know, with a book, I can tell you what Caleb's thinking, and, you know, it's natural. I can tell you what Shelley's thinking, but in a movie, you can't really do that. So then it becomes, the director, the studio, the writer's interpretation of it, which is great.
Okay, I like to ask every author that I interview what music and what movies were they watching when they were putting their work together, because, I don't know, it just kind of gives the reader another idea of the things that they like and how they were trying to put their work together.
Sure. That's a great question. I know exactly what I was watching. For Delore, I was watching Goodfellas, Casino. I was watching Suspiria. I was watching Vertigo. I was watching Taxi Driver. I was watching, later on, I was watching Horror Hotel. The original Frankenstein. And then, you know, in between all of it, you know, because I always have something on the background, in the background when I'm writing, whether it's music or a movie, like, it would be things like White Chicks, or The Hangover, or Old School, or something completely the opposite of the tone of the book, so I could infuse a little bit of levity and a little bit of humor into it. Other movies, Martyrs, Let the Right One In, I watched all of those around the time. I remember seeing Let the Right One in the movie theater by myself in the middle of when I was writing Ariel, and it totally jarred me. Like, I hadn't been that affected by a movie in a long time. Paranormal Activity, I remember I watched later on around the same time. That was definitely an inspiration. Other inspirations, you know, musically, I'm constantly listening to music, and, you know, definitely there were certain albums that were on repeat. Metallica's Master of Puppets, Alice in Chains' Dirt, Alice in Chains' Jar of Flies, Tool's Anima is, I think, one of the greatest records ever. A Perfect Circle, Meridian Nam, and 13 Step, Pantera's The Great Southern Trendkill, Korn, Life is Peachy, Stain's Dysfunction was also really big. Slipknot's All Hope is Gone came out around the same time as I started Lila. It was August 2008, and Stain's Illusion of Progress came out at the same time, too, and I was listening to both of those records a lot, but All Hope is Gone was definitely an influence. There's a song called Gehenna that really put me in that place, and Snuff by Slipknot, too, was always very, very special. And, you know, the Stained records, Illusion of Progress and Dysfunction, Chapter 5, I love Stained. Aaron's been a very big influence on me. Jonathan Davis has been a big influence. Maynard from Tool and A Perfect Circle has been a big influence. I think that you know, Phil Anselmo has been a big influence, too. I would listen to The Great Southern Trendkill, and that breakdown in Hell's Wrath, Living Through Me, where he's just talking, always creeped me out, and I always thought that it was so inspiring and so just telling of how great of a singer and frontman he is, just to rip himself open like that and kind of show that perspective, and Floods on The Great Southern Trendkill. I love that outro solo that Dimebag Darrell does, and Phil's lyrics in the song are just, they're mind-blowing. I was listening to Down a lot, too. What else came out 2008? Obviously for Ariel, I was listening to Team Sleep, because that Team Sleep song is in the story.
Mm-hmm.
Mastodon's Blood Mountain, Mastodon's Leviathan. Let me think if there's anything else. And definitely White Zombie, Astro Creep 2000 was always big. You know, it's really, music is so important to me that, you know, and definitely, like, Use Your Illusion 1 and 2, Guns N' Roses were always important. Appetite for Destruction, I definitely listen to those when I write. And, you know, Pearl Jam as well.
Okay, so for the readers that have only read the first five, you know, the first five chapters, so to speak, the first five short stories, without giving anything away, what do you think they should expect?
I think that they should expect a a unique story that's very personal and is, you know, very, very immersive. I think that, but at the same time, as immersive as it is, it's quick. You know, it's over pretty quickly. And I think that they should expect to enter into a new world that, you know, they're going to want to come back to, hopefully.
Hey, for people that haven't, you know, experienced that world yet, how would you sell this book to them? What would you tell them to expect?
I think that it takes all of these different elements from horror and fantasy and drama and action, and puts them within a landscape of a very human story. And, you know, it's a page turner. It's thrilling. Like, you don't know what's going to happen next. I mean, that's the beauty of the town, and that's why I go back to saying that the town is the main character, because the town influences all the action. And, you know, everything is dictated and predicated upon this shaky, strange place where anything can happen. And, you know, I think that the cool thing about it is that you don't really know what's going on. Even after you finish the first five books, you still don't really know what's up with the town.
As far as, you know, what some people would consider the main character, if there was a main character, Agent Jeffries, does he, without giving anything away, is he someone that we're going to kind of learn more about his backstory? Because as of right now, I mean, we know absolutely nothing about him except that he's, you know, investigating. So does he kind of get a little bit more of a story?
He absolutely does. He absolutely does. So, he's going to come more into focus for sure.
Okay.
And I think that he's interesting because it's like, in some ways he's the reader, because we experience the books through his eyes. But, you know, there is a backstory for him.
Okay. So moving ahead, aside from Delore, are there any other projects that you're working on that you'd like our listeners to know about?
Absolutely. I think that there's a couple things for sure. I wrote a book that came out 2 years ago now, called "Do the Devil's Work for Him," with one of my best friends, Amy Chiaretto. That's a guide for kids on how to break into the music industry in unconventional, unique ways. And that book's available now. You can get it on Amazon. I have another book called Six Bullets to Sunrise, which is a short novella in the vein of Delore. It's definitely similar, but it's outside of that world. It's a completely different story. And it's really, 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 really important to me. And, you know, I wrote it in about a day, and we released it via BloodyDisgusting.com, and it's been downloaded like over 5,000 times, and it's super, super cool to read. You can also get it it's available for the Kindle as well. I have another book called A Pocket Full of Pills, A Whole Lot of Highway, that's going to be available, you know, digitally on the Kindle, iBooks, all that good stuff very soon. That's another short story. In addition to that, I have my friend Ivan Moody, the singer of Five Finger Death Punch, is going to record an audiobook for Lila.
Wow.
So there's a lot going on.
Okay, as far as this is the last question, as far as what you want people to get from your work, if someone was to come up to you and said that they read Delore and they could say exactly what you wanted them to say, that perfect response that kind of made your day, that got you going, what do you think it would be, and why?
It's a good question. I would love for them to say that they were entertained, first off, and I would love for them to say that they saw a piece of themselves somewhere in the story, and I would love for them to say that they want to read more.